most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we get to say hello once again to our good friend, the former host of Sports Talk, who is obviously for quite some time now been with the Tennessee Titans, as he is the senior broadcast director of and play-by-play voice of the Tennessee Titans. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine, John. How you doing?
Doing quite well, and it's been interesting to see so much take place as it has, just simply to the conversation about rules. And with the, I guess, virtual meeting that took place, what did you think of either what was tabled or what was passed when they were considering an alternative to the onside kick, as well as the eye in the sky or booth judge? What did you think of what passed and what didn't?
You know, I think what passed wasn't really that interesting. They will automatically replay. They'll have reviews of scoring plays and turnovers that are wiped out by a penalty. Defenseless player protection goes to a kick or punt returner who has gained possession of the ball but has not had a chance to make himself into a full runner. He's considered defenseless. And then the Bill Belichick rule about running off the game clock, I call it the Bill Belichick rule because he did it and then he had it done to him. The Titans actually did it in back-to-back weeks at Houston and then in the first week of the playoffs, where supposedly, allegedly, that Wesley Woodyard got penalties on purpose to run the clock. Now, I don't know if that's true. But it ran a bunch of time off the clock, and it got Bill Belichick very upset. It is now illegal to do that. Too bad for Belichick. the other thing too is you can bring three guys back from IR instead of just two, which I think is a really good move. I think there was never a real fear that anybody was stashing players on injured reserve. Injured reserve until just a few years ago had always been permanent, and now you have the ability to bring three players back. I don't think any of those were as interesting as what was the Greg Schiano rule originally. Schiano, when he was the head coach in Tampa, pushed the 4th and 15 idea for make it, take it, rather than an onside kick. And at the time, that was laughed off. And then the Alliance of American Football did something with it, and it really got everybody's attention. The league is not quite sure what to do with it yet, and I think the problem with it is the fact that it was pitched as an untimed down, like an extra point. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to talk about that further, and I think you're going to see them talk about things further, including the sky judge idea, based on the fact that they dove headfirst into the ruling last year about reviewing interference, and that turned out to be a disaster.
Why was it a disaster?
It was a disaster because it was not well thought out, Jimmy. They weren't going to pick up flags. It's a very subjective call. The only people who were really for it were the coaches. And that was because Sean Payton was hacked off because of what happened in the playoff game. And you can't start changing your rule book based on one thing happening. It was a bad no call in that game. But you know something? The Saints had the ball, had a chance to win the game in overtime. I mean, it wasn't like that necessarily cost them the ball game for sure. There were other opportunities to win it. And you just can't change rules like that and not have thought it out. Had they played it out in the preseason, had they looked at it differently, had they taken 2 or 3 years to examine it, maybe it would have worked. But the fact that they just dove headfirst into it, the officials didn't want it, the league, you get a feeling, didn't want it, and there just wasn't much of an appetite for it. I mean, it didn't even get a vote going forward to keep it. It just died on the table. They never, you know, it didn't have enough support to even get put on the ballot again.
I think what happened last year underscored how hard it is to call pass interference. What is it? You and I could watch the same game and disagree on it. I think that was a part of what
100%.
Happened.
100%. Yeah, I mean, but what they were going to do, except in the Saints game, you're right. and listen, that was a horrible, you know, that was a horrible no call. I mean, it was wrong. But pass interference is very subjective. You know, the thing that they found early on and that Vrabel was really vocal about on our behalf was they were not going to pick up a flag. They were not going to question the officials in that way. As a matter of fact, I don't think they picked up a flag on defensive pass interference all year, if I'm not mistaken, maybe once. They would drop a flag if they looked at a review and saw something that they didn't see in live action. So there were instances where they went back and dropped a flag, but they just couldn't decide how to implement it. And that's the difficulty with officiating is it's like, okay, do we go to Sky Judge? And is Sky Judge in the official's ear on the field saying, hey, you might want to ask, tell the back judge this, or you might want to do this, or and there are some who wonder if that's not already been happening. You know, if there's not somebody in the ear, I mean, supposedly there's not, but I mean, who knows?
Mike, do you think that the Sky Judge? Now, I understand they're going to use it in preseason games if we have some of those.
Preseason.
Yes.
Yes.
What would be the objection to it right now? Do you think?
Implementation. I think that there is a feeling that they don't want that person to be able to overrule the other seven on the field, including the referee. The NFL's thing with replay and with everything they've tried to do is they've tried to keep it in the hands of the referee. You know, like when you watch college football, they buzz down in certain instances and they just tell the referee what happened. And they say, okay, this is what the call is. I guess they do it in Birmingham in the SEC, right? They watch the games there. And
correct.
Okay. Well, in the NFL, the initial feeling was we want the referee to look at that iPad and to make the decision. And now they've kind of gone away from that where New York looks at the replay with the review judge and with the referee having some input. So there's a collective discussion, but realistically the decision is going to be made in New York. They just don't want, you know, sort of Obi-Wan Kenobi sitting in the booth calling the whole game. And I think that's what, you know, That's what everybody's kind of afraid of. They want this person to be able to be involved, but to not take over. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it does, but I just think that they have the wherewithal to avoid the egregious mistake. It just has to come down
right.
to whether or not it is approved in what has been collectively bargained and agreed to. I just think that with what they've missed out on, and as you and Jimmy were talking about just moments ago, first there was the seasons-long debate on exactly what makes a catch, and even though that's
right.
still a little gray area, now it's about, okay, but did anybody interfere with that catch, and how do you determine if that's happened? They're taking too long to get through the rule book if it's just one play, both sides of one play
right.
over a four-year period.
Well, and you're going to – I mean, so now we're going to have a holding call and what is holding. And I mean, I know baseball sounds like he's eventually going to move to a robotic umpire behind the plate. And I get, you know, that seems like it's coming. I don't think football can work that way. And while some of the officials, you know, you have your favorites and then you have your ones who are not, for the most part, they do a good job. And – you just you don't have that many games that are impacted in terms of the result by the officials. And do we want to get into this thing where it's just over and over and over again? Now, theoretically, if there had been a sky judge in that Rams-Saints game, would the sky judge have been allowed to buzz down and say, okay, your guy there missed it. That's pass interference. You know, that's got to be called. I don't know. So I think that's the mechanics of what they want to do in the preseason. To me, John and Jimmy, that's what they should do. That's what they should do is take the preseason and let's mix it up a little bit. Let's see how it goes and try to figure out how everyone's role. The other thing, too, is they want former referees in that role. They don't have 17 former referees to sit in that booth. Those guys just aren't available right now. So they've got to be able to get to a number and figure out, you know, exactly who those folks are.
I'll do it, but only for Saints games.
Well, if they're not playing for the tight against the Titans. Well, you know, we had a call in our game last year against the Saints where, I mean, it should have been a defenseless receiver call. Turned out to be a fumble. Saints return it and score what turns out to be the clinching touchdown. Well, they ended up fining Gardner Johnson, the defensive back, who put the hit on. So after the fact, they said, oh, yeah, that's illegal. Well, if the catch stands, we're in position to go win the game right at the end of the ball game, you know. And so my question is, in that instance, would that have been reviewable? Would Sky Judge have said, yeah, you guys blew that, you know? Or would that not be something that you could look at? When you saw the replay, he clearly went into him with his helmet. It was an illegal hit. It was deemed he got a FedEx that cost him $28,000 on Wednesday of the next week because that turned out to be the case. But in the moment, it was neither called nor reviewable. So what do you do?
Our guest, Mike Keith, if you have a question or comment for Mike, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We've got more with Mike coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Thanks for listening and making 99.1 The Sports Animal number one for sports conversation at work.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Mike Keith, Senior Director of Broadcasting for play-by-play voice of the Tennessee Titans, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. If you have a question or comment for Mike about the Titans or the NFL, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And, Mike, as reports go, Adam Schefter tweets today, so the NFL telling teams that they must stay at their team facilities for this summer's training camps. What do you think that entails? Is that surprising at all?
Well, I'm thinking just out of the box, it's a positive. Because, John, I think from what we had heard, there were some teams that were having to weigh the options of not being able to be at their facilities. And so what this tells me is they think there's a chance that teams will be able to be at their facilities in all 32 locations. As we've heard good things from some states that we were worried about in terms of, you know, cautious optimism in reopening different facilities in different parts of their state. So I think that's good. I think that's probably also a nod to the players, because I think the players probably feel like there's a safety issue that is a positive if they stay in their own facility. It means they don't have to go away for camp, which is obviously, in most cases, for players, a good thing and a positive thing. But just the feeling is we can control our environment better, and in being able to control our environment better, we can keep you safer. I think it's probably, you know, a feeling that we're moving towards something that's going to look like a real training camp. Now, I'm still not willing to say I think we go July 31st and every preseason game is the same and everything is done the exact same way. But, you know, it also makes sense that you could train against someone, another team, before a preseason game or after a preseason game at your facility. Teams have facilities large enough to be able to accommodate two ball clubs for things of that sort. We'll see. But when I read the tweets that initially came out, and they came out from teams like Carolina is not going to Wofford in Spartanburg as they have since their inception. And Dallas is not going to Oxnard, California, as they have done in recent years. You know, I'm sure for them that's not optimum, but I think it's probably good for football. I read it, at least initially, as a positive for all of football that they're making plans to go forward in this way.
It was interesting to see the reaction. I don't think there's any question that Adoree Jackson took a significant step last year, and it's also apparent that he had a pretty good bond with Logan Ryan. And so for a younger player that is, again, building his NFL resume, what is it like when you have a teammate that you've leaned on for advice and or has kind of served as a mentor? When that person's no longer there, what kind of challenge do you think that presents for somebody moving on, realizing that it's going to be with a different cast?
You know, that's a great question, John, because the discussion always ends up being, well, what about leadership? You know, you lose Jarrell Casey and Wesley Woodyard's apparently not coming back, and Logan Ryan and Delanie Walker and, you know, some of these, Jack Conklin and some of these more veteran players. And there's all this talk about leadership. And generally, people see the leadership thing as who stands in the middle of the huddle that they film on NFL films where the guy goes, hey, we're going to really get after him today, you know, or whatever he says. Usually a little more dramatic than that, but you get the point.
Yes.
So for most of that, the whole leadership thing is a bunch of junk, to borrow the Pat Ryan phrase. The wisdom and counsel thing, though, is real. You know, that's the part of it. Deion Lewis was a guy in the running back room. I mean, he didn't play great football for us last year, but he was still a tempo setter in terms of how he went about his business. What I've seen over the years is most of the leaders are smart people who go about their business and they're total pros. In the case of what Adoree was talking about with Logan, that was a guy who was a total pro who he talked a lot of shop with, just as you would at any job. And yeah, we've lost a lot of that. You know, we've lost a lot of guys who could provide the wisdom and the counsel and set the example. And so now the Adorees and the Taylor Lewans and guys like that have to move into those roles. When it seems like just yesterday, both of them were rookies.
Mike, a lot of people feel like that with a limited camp, that it might benefit those coaches who have been there or quarterbacks who have been there, whereas you had less chance to put in your system if you're a new coach. Do you think that could be a benefit to Mike Vrabel since he's been with the Titans for a couple of years, and also that Tannehill has – established himself? Do you think that might give the Titans a little bit of an advantage over some teams?
Yes, I think it should. This is not a young team anymore. This is not – now, I mean, they're not the Saints. You know, they're not Tampa Bay with the gray beards that they have. But this is not – I mean, the quarterback's 32 years old. The receivers have all played here. The offensive linemen have all played here. The running back's in his fifth year. I mean, by the time you get to your fifth year in the NFL, you're middle-aged. You know, you're experienced. You're expected to be a leader. So, yeah, I think in the early part of the season, it's a big advantage. And you've got to take advantage of that in those situations. And the Titans certainly do. I mean, you know, this is a team started 2-4 a year ago and then was 4-5 at one point. I mean, you've got to step it up, man. You can't let that happen. And that's the challenge of the whole thing.
Regarding Jadeveon Clowney, do you think that he has priced himself out of signing a contract? Is that simple? Or do you think an injury concern is also weighing against clubs paying Clowney what he wants?
I think Clowney's price has come down because I don't think the market was so much there for somebody to make that sort of investment in a guy who they couldn't spend time with in this offseason to be able to figure out through their doctors and everything exactly where he was. I mean, Clowney had his first surgery in high school. And then obviously had some issues at South Carolina, particularly after his junior year. Had what was reported to be a microfracture surgery at the end of his rookie year. Has had three knee scopes. I mean, there's been a lot go on with Clowney. Now, the interesting thing about Clowney is he gets this rep like he plays three games a year, and that's not true. I mean, Clowney hasn't played 16 games in a season but once, but he has appeared in over 80% of his team's games through the course of his career, and an even higher percentage than that after his rookie year when he just played in four games. But I think you want to lay eyes on him, though, Jimmy. Yeah. I think you want to talk to him. I think you want your doctor to talk to him. I think you want the people in your building to spend some time with him. I think what's cost him is not so much the price tag but the pandemic. And I think he's going to prove to somebody he's healthy and he's going to be worth double digits, millions of dollars, and he's going to sign somebody. I just think before, at this late date in free agency, you commit $12 or $13 million, even if it's over just 1 year, I think you want to see him. And I think that's what it comes down to.
When do you think that people in Clowney's situation will be able to perhaps go through the hands-on process that teams would be holding out for just to make sure somebody's good to go?
Great question. There is a feeling that we're going to get a chance to see coaches back in the building in the next few days. There have been rumblings that they might bring players in and let them do some mini camp stuff. That window ends on June the 26th, so they would probably have to do that. If they're going to do something in person, you would think on June the 15th. But you would think that as we sort of inch back towards having players get together, have coaches back in the building, allowing more people in the building – I wonder if you could see something like that be allowed to happen maybe later this month, maybe the second half of this month. I think the league is going to be slow. And I mean, for a guy like Clowney, he's not in any hurry. I mean, he's not missing anything right now. Mm-hmm. He could go to a virtual meeting. And I mean, here's the thing, too, and this is one of the reasons that if you're playing the game of NFL Clue, a lot of people are putting him with the Titans, because he's played in this system before for Mike Vrabel. So, you know, does that give the Titans an advantage? On paper, yes, but who knows? You know, I don't know what the doctor's going to say. I don't know what John Robinson's going to say about the contract. I don't have any idea about that. But, you would think we're going to start to get to a point here as things seem I don't know if things are opening up as much as people are finding ways to do things. Does that make sense? I think everybody's sort of figuring out as we move towards what our new normal for the foreseeable future is going to be. We're starting to see people say, okay, we can do this now if we do it this way. Long answer, sorry.
That's quite all right, and it's and it benefits the Titans greatly that both Vrabel and Robinson have that previous relationship with data analyst Colonel Mustard.
Nice.
Our guest, Mike
but
Keith.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean,
absolutely.
You, I mean, you
absolutely. 100%.
You do the same thing with recruiting. You say, well, he wants to play early, and he wants to major in communication, so this is the perfect place for him. I mean, it's the same thing everybody's doing with Clowney. It's like, why would he turn down all this money in Cleveland if he didn't already have a place picked out? And so one of the places he supposedly has picked out, if you believe the rumors, is here. We'll see.
That we will. And we will. We've got more with Mike Keith coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Mike joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Mike Keith, to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Mike, we weren't able to catch up with you last week, and certainly hope you enjoyed that. But tell me, what did you think of the Brady, Manning, Tiger, Phil foursome and event?
I think the trash talk is one of the great things. And so we don't have a lot of sports to talk about, as you guys know right now. But very rarely in a sporting event do you get a chance to see not only the level of competition, but also the trash talk. And I thought that was pretty good. You know, Brady and Manning really have a pretty special relationship. I think the world is becoming aware of their friendship, and it's really a cool thing to see. It's very similar in my mind to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. And I just think that, you know, when you have superstars who have that sort of relationship, it's really a cool thing. I got to watch Brady do his trash talk when they practiced in Nashville last year for a couple days, and he is a very good trash talker. I mean, he is really, really good at it. I think all of us have seen Manning do some of that at different points. He's not bad at it himself. And so when athletes do that and they're competitive people, even if it's not on their field of play, it's fun. Doesn't hurt anybody. It's good for business. And I mean, obviously, those guys are entertaining together, so I wasn't surprised it did the ratings that it did. I was interested in all of it.
It's interesting to see that Ryan Tannehill and Jonnu Smith have been working out some together down in Florida, and the great news is there have been no B&Es or breaking and enterings that have gotten in their way.
Yeah. You're talking about Brady going to the wrong house?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great story. I mean, how'd you like to show up at your house and Tom Brady's there? I live here, right? No, wrong house. Yeah, Tannehill, we got the chance to spend some time with him on the official Titans podcast a few weeks ago and really enjoyed that. I mean, he's really a leader and has shown a lot of leadership qualities. And, I mean, it's his football team now. It's always if you have a strong quarterback, it's always the quarterback's football team. And I think we have that in him. And if this works out well for the Titans and works out well for Ryan Tannehill, I think we're going to win a bunch of games, because I think he certainly has the right mindset for how he handles everything. He's been impressive in every single instance that I've been around him, and I know his teammates really value him a lot too.
Hey, Mike, in regard to some favorites in the NFC, I wanted to ask you about this. This came from this ESPN deal. They had New Orleans 59% favorite to win its division, San Francisco 53%, Dallas 48%, Minnesota 38%. Any of those you would agree with or disagree with?
Ooh. Kind of like Philly. I know that's going to hurt the Dallas fans, but I kind of like Philly. I guess the Dallas thing is assuming that Dak Prescott's the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Got to get that straight. The New Orleans thing is real interesting because Tampa's got quite a club, but you know who's restocked some is Atlanta. I think that's going to be a really good division. And the whole Matt Rhule thing in Carolina fascinates me too, Jimmy. I want to see what that's going to look like, because, you know, he's a pro guy who went to college and had success, but now he took almost his entire Baylor staff there with him.
Yeah.
So I'm dying to see what that's going to look like, especially with how he's going to use McCaffrey. That's interesting. I hadn't seen all that. I saw Peter King put out his power ratings yesterday morning in his Monday morning column. I don't know what they call it anymore, except it comes out on Mondays. And he had the Titans 7th in his power poll.
Oh. Yeah. One team mentioned as an under-the-radar team, Arizona, because of the offense. Do you think the Cardinals are ready to make a significant jump?
I think offensively they're going to be really good. I mean, when you get DeAndre Hopkins and you're able to, you know, add some pieces like they have, and the quarterback had a nice year last year, and you know, they finished up, they won 5 ball games, so they ended up a little bit better than everybody thought they would. Yeah, they could. I want to see them on defense. They've certainly got some pass rushers. But, that's an interesting one. I mean, they're one I would say to watch. I think Miami's going to be another team to watch. That's another ball club. But they may suffer from the thing we talked about earlier, and that is being young early in the season. I'm going to be fascinated to see what they do with Fitzpatrick and Tagovailoa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to ask you about, Baker Mayfield said it's time to stop talking and start playing. And I thought last year there was too much hype around the Browns. But I wonder if now that maybe they are ready to take a step. How do you see the Browns?
Yeah, I do. I think they're a playoff team. Yeah. If I had to do 6 playoff teams from the AFC, I would say the Browns are a playoff team. I think they take a big step forward. I mean, the hype to the Browns last year was not because of their a lack of talent or people overrating the talent. They got tons of talent. That's a really, really talented team. My question about them is how it was going to all fit together with everybody being new. Well, guess what? You know, they've got some newness there too, but I think them as under the radar is a much better fit. You know, the running joke in several places is they were the preseason Super Bowl champions. That wasn't their fault, but I mean, everybody crowned them everything before, you know, the first whistle had blown. And now under the radar, I think that's a team probably goes 10-6 and makes the playoffs.
Let's go to the phones and catch up with Michael, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Michael.
Hey, how we doing, John?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. How about you, Jimmy?
Doing great. Thanks.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
I'm good. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you, too. When I call, I want to hear all them John Wilkerson stories, but I don't want to wear it out. So I want to ask you a question about the Titans. Do you think Derrick Henry might be poised for, like, a really super season? I mean, a really good season.
I do. I think he's going to play well. I think with this offensive line, with the fact that the system stays in place offensively for another year, with the passing threats that we have, so it's going to be hard to load the box. I think he has a chance to lead the league in rushing again. I really do.
I think that's the case, Mike. I really do, and I look forward to seeing it, I hope.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I know what you mean, buddy.
Well, thanks, Mike. You have a wonderful, great day, buddy.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call.
Michael, we do appreciate it. We'll get a break. We've got one more segment with Mike Keith coming up to join us. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
All sports, all the time. It's not a lifestyle we chose. We were born this way. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans. To get a question or comment in with Mike under the wire, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Hey, Mike, I thought this was pretty interesting. I've watched Rob Ninkovich with ESPN, former New Orleans and New England Patriots player. He said this the other day, and he said that he thinks that Tua Tagovailoa will be the best quarterback in the AFC in 3 years. That's an incredibly strong statement, considering you got Pat Mahomes over there and Lamar Jackson. But from your standpoint, do you think Tua has the chance to be a star in the NFL?
I do. I don't think he's going to be a bigger star than Patrick Mahomes. The thing about Mahomes that I didn't know from watching him in college and that I've experienced, unfortunately, in person three times. I mean, you just can't get over this guy's arm. And I know arm strength isn't everything, but John's guy, John Elway, certainly proved how important it was, particularly when you can use it in off-schedule play. I want to see Tua do that, Jimmy. I think Tua's going to be a good player, but Tua was – Tua was playing on teams that were generally better than the teams he was playing against. He was playing with NFL receivers. He was playing, in a system that he ran well, and he did a nice job. And I think he can elevate to the next level. The difference with Mahomes, though, is and this is what's just crazy. If you go back and watch our AFC Championship game, there were several situations where we got him off the spot and made him run backwards 10 yards or sideways, and then he threw like a 25-yard completion, and you're sitting here. And can Tua do that? Can Tua create in that way? I don't know that about his game because we never had to see it at Alabama. I mean, he didn't have to do that. So, and I'm interested, but, I mean, over Mahomes, I don't think so.
George Kittle wants more than tight end money, and he certainly is a great tight end for San Francisco. Do you think with Kittle and with Kelce and with Ertz and some other tight ends that we might see tight ends escalate in value in the NFL as far as their salaries?
I think you got to pay Kittle because he also blocks, Jimmy. And the thing about him blocking is that means you can keep him on the field all the time.
you can run the two tight end set, the three tight end set. I mean, you don't have to take him out of the game in short yardage situations. The other guys block some, kind of, sort of. Kittle's good block.
Maybe.
And so, you know, that part of it really gets undersold. When a lot of these guys come out and you say, oh, my goodness, so-and-so is this great tight end. Well, really what they are is they're a jumbo wide receiver. And you love to have those guys for matchups, but what you want is you want to be able to put packages of skill people on the field, and you don't know what's coming. And even there's nothing predictable in it. That's why Christian McCaffrey is probably the most valuable running back in the league, because they can do so much with him in their system, and why Matt Rhule is probably so excited to work with him. Certain receivers, they can play inside, they can play outside, they'll block. You know, they become more valuable. That's the way George Kittle is, and you're looking for those guys all the time. They're hard to find.
Mike, one of the things, considering, again, how unique this landscape that folks still a lot to deal with, but there's a defensive lineman for the Saints that tears his ACL while working out. You have Henry Ruggs III, first-round pick for the Raiders, injures his thigh while helping a friend move. Are you surprised that perhaps we haven't seen more of things like that since there haven't been organized team activities and mini camps and things like that?
You know, back 20 years ago, I would have said yes, but I think the younger people are smarter than we were. I think I'm sure there are some who do stupid things, but it doesn't seem like there are as many of them, thank goodness. We had a linebacker who played for us who tore his Achilles at a July 4th picnic on a bench. He put his foot up on a bench, and the bench flew up. It was not nailed in, and the bench flew up and split his Achilles.
Ooh.
I mean, life does happen, and there are accidents that come up. But, there were a lot of guys who used to do a lot of dumb stuff years ago, and I just don't sense these young people do it the same way, thank goodness. Some do.
Did have the thought, as we were talking about the Manning-Brady golf event, who for the Titans do you think would – I mean, and I'm not talking about who's the best golfer, I'm just saying – who do you think would be the best suited to take part in something like that if it were presented to the team as an option?
Oh, well, the best golfer is Brett Kern. Brett Kern is like a, what do they call it, a plus handicap? He's really, really good. I don't know that he's a big talker. I don't know who plays a lot of golf for us. In my time with the team, it's generally been the kickers. Craig Hendrick was a wonderful golfer. Al Del Greco, as you know, phenomenal
really
golfer. His son a phenomenal golfer. I mean, we haven't had a lot of position players that were just really fantastic guys. I don't know who that would be for us right now. That's a great question.
In terms of personality, who do you think would shine if it were if it were another sport or competition?
Taylor Lewan. You could take Taylor Lewan to, you know, horseshoes, badminton, you know, whatever you wanted to do. I mean, he would make it entertaining. I did a show with him in 2015 for a year, and I'm going to tell you, I held my breath in regards to the FCC every single week. It was quite an adventure. He's grown up some, but he's still Taylor Lewan. I mean, I don't think that part of it is ever going to change. I don't know that I'd want to see him on a golf course. But, as my relatives would say, he's a character.
Yes, I believe that is that's where the conversation starts. And for more
Titans,
that's
where we start.
Yes. And for more Titans and NFL conversation, you can download the official Titans podcast. You can look for the OTP wherever you download your podcast. Mike, what can folks find with the most recent effort?
Dave McGinnis and Jim Wyatt are on the one we've just posted today, and talking about a lot of things, including why Jadeveon Clowney has not yet signed with somebody. Coach Mack throws out some pretty good reasons why. We also talk about Taylor Lewan and his discussion of becoming a leader and how he's ready to do it now where he was not ready before. And it's pretty enlightening. I think people will enjoy this edition of the OTP.
Mike, thank you so much for your time. Always appreciate it, and we look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks very much for having me on the show, guys. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you. You as well. That's Mike Keith, Senior Director of Broadcasting for Play-by-Play Voice of the Tennessee Titans, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break when we return hour number four of Sports Talk. And, of course, that means up next, somebody is going to reach, strain, see if they can't grasp the ever-elusive golden attaboy with our trivia challenge, the Sports Fix at 6. That and more coming up as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.